Srimad Bhagavatam 9th Canto, Chapter 19, King Yayati Achieves Liberation, Text 17. Matra Swasvata Hittava Nadi Vitta Sinopavet Svalavan Indriya Gramo Vimamsam Afrikarkriti. Translation. One should not allow oneself to sit on the same seat even with one's own mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that even though one is very advanced in knowledge, he may be attracted by sex. Purport. Learning the etiquette of how to deal with women does not free one from sexual attraction. As specifically mentioned herewith, such attraction is possible even with one's mother, sister, or daughter. Generally, of course, one is not sexually attracted to his mother, sister, or daughter, but if one allows himself to sit very close to such a woman, one may be attracted. This is a psychological fact. It may be said that one is liable to be attracted if he is not very advanced in civilized life. However, as specifically mentioned here, vipam samapikarshati, even if one is highly advanced, materially or spiritually, he may be attracted by lusty desires. The object of attraction may even be one's mother, sister, or daughter. Therefore, one should be extremely careful in dealings with women. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was most strict in such dealings, especially after he accepted the sannyas order. Indeed, no woman could come near him to offer him respect. Again, one is warned herewith that one should be extremely careful in dealings with women. A brahmachari is forbidden even to see the wife of his spiritual master if she happens to be young. The wife of the spiritual master may sometimes take some service from the disciple of her husband, as she would from a son, but if the wife of the spiritual master is young, a brahmachari is forbidden to render service to her. Translation again. One should not allow oneself to sit on the same seat, even with one's own mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that even though one is very advanced in knowledge, he may be attracted by sex. Om again, Timurandasya, Yenanjana, Shalabaya, Chakshunimanitam Yena, Tasmai, Sri Guruve. Jaya Sri Krishna, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Vidarbha, Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a classic verse quoted by Prabhupada, and it certainly does fly in the face of what people consider to be culture and civilization today. Today the standard is, the closer you get, the better. Everyone is so swimming in sexual attraction that anything that would diminish such a fire is considered to be uncivilized and barbaric. So, according to today's degraded standard, this verse is very quaint. What do you mean? Don't allow yourself to sit on the same seat, even with your own mother, sister, or daughter. These days, of course, allow yourself to sit as close as possible to everyone and anything without discrimination. This is advancement. No need to worry about controlling your senses, because worrying about controlling your senses leads to repression. The more that you're open, unrestrained, and go with the flow, the more successful human being you are. That is the standard throughout the world. Even India is becoming overrun by this. Your loyalty is to your senses. How are your senses feeling right now? That is what you should be dedicated to. Your vows are to follow your senses wherever they lead. What happens? Well, what happens, happens. And in this way, throughout the world, there'll be peace, prosperity, and justice. If everyone would just be allowed to follow their senses, no matter how the senses feel, whenever, wherever, with whomever. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada was not afraid to, or not shy to quote this verse. And he would emphasize, Balavan Indriya Gramo. Because the senses are so strong, even though you are vidvamsam, even though you're very learned and advanced, either materially or spiritually, still, you can be victimized. We're being taught a healthy respect for the power of illusory energy. I often have said, and you probably remember, at once Srila Prabhupada was very charitably explaining what he said was the only difference between his disciples and him. The only difference between my disciples and me is that my disciples have no fear of mine. And I'm always praying to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. This verse teaches you, indeed, a healthy respect for the power of illusory energy. Balavan Indriya Brahma. It is something that happens in the attraction between two bodies that becomes bewildering. Even you may start out with the best of intentions, but something jumps in the middle. First of all, the bodies have their tendencies packed into them by the modes of material nature. Secondly, besides those bodies with their inbuilt proclivities, you have material nature itself working. So all these things are going on. And here we are naively thinking, I am very learned, I am very expert now. I would never be victimized by the illusion. So what's the solution these days? There is no concept of victimization by the illusory energy. What happens, happens. Just get as much pleasure and enjoyment as you like. Victim of the illusory energy? This is Hare Krishna negative talk. No, we are the enjoyers of the material energy. How's it working out? Do we see on the faces of persons who have taken this way of life, do you see happiness? Do you see prosperity in the world? You see prosperity for some, but are they happy with their prosperity? They're miserable. These passages of Srimad Bhagavatam are causing us to be reflective. Stop, take a look, think. That is a great achievement in this day and age, where everything is instant. Stop, think about what's happening, think about what you're doing, think about where you want to go. Our criticism of society today is based on two principles. First of all, no conception of liberation from material existence. Who thinks about it? And number two, no understanding that this body leads to another body. Therefore, you should be concerned, what kind of body will you get next? Not an inkling of thought about these two things. You're taught, one body is all you have, so live it up to the max. Indulge your senses however you like, because this is the only body you're going to get. I was walking in Wellington a few weeks ago, and I saw a sign in front of a shop that said, one life is all you get, but if you live it right, that's all you need. If you do it right, that's all you need. Achieve fulfilling sense gratification. If you've got it, you just got it a few times, then one life's all you need. This is animal life. Yet, we're a little afraid, perhaps, of such strong injunctions as stated in this verse. It sounds a bit puritanical, it sounds a bit quaint, old-fashioned. You have to be very careful. Wouldn't life be better if we just let things flow and not have all these restrictions? And, in other words, not have culture. The Bhagavatam's point is that human culture begins by distinguishing between male and female and having proper protocols in place. This is what the Bhagavatam explains in the seventh canto. Such distinction, discrimination, protocols, procedures are symptomatic of real human life. And if one has not understood this point, then one has not actually achieved a human body, even though one has a human body. This is explained in the verse in the seventh canto that women are like fire and men are like the butter pot. It has nothing to do with anyone personally. It's all about material nature. We are not these bodies, but we are captivated inside these bodies and subject to their proclivities, their propensities. So you don't have to think twice what happens when the butter pot is around the fire. There's melting going on. So the Vedic civilization, which is advocating real human civilization, takes all these things into account because the purpose is always held high. The purpose of human life is to attain freedom from the body, not to be more captivated by the body. So once we understand the purpose of real human civilization, then all these strictures become clear. Otherwise, you may wonder, this is a bit archaic. This is a bit old-fashioned. We have a lot to learn. How to respect the power of mind. This verse today is being spoken by none other than Yayati. You heard His Holiness Ramaswamy tell the story yesterday. The history. It's not a legend. Yayati is wanting to explain for the benefit of everyone. You're going to hear in tomorrow's verse more of his autobiography. He said, I have spent a full 1,000 years enjoying sense gratification, yet my desire to enjoy such pleasure increases daily. He's giving you his experience. Look, you're never going to be satisfied. I've been doing it for 1,000 years, trying to enjoy my senses. There's no satiation, there's no diminishment. The fire simply increases. So just as we heard yesterday, the history of Yayati, Devayani, Sarvastha. Yayati, after realizing how he'd been trapped, he decided to tell his wife, Devayani's story. So he told his own history, as we heard it yesterday, but he told it in terms of a he-goat and a she-goat. Sometimes it's easier to present something to someone indirectly, let them get the point themselves. So he said to his wife, my dear wife, oh beloved, my Priya, let me tell you the story of someone like me. Hearing the story of someone like me, those householders who have retired from family life, they lament. Say, why would they lament upon hearing such a story? Yayati is meaning that they know how they wasted their life. They know how so much energy was wasted. Therefore, when they hear my story, they can relate and they lament along with me. So let me tell you this story of someone just like me. And Yayati begins to describe the he-goat and the she-goat. He's telling exactly what went on between Devayani and him, as well as Sarvastha and Shukracharya, exactly as we heard yesterday. But he substituted two goats. Now, why goats? We also heard yesterday how goats are notorious for, even when they're in line, in queue for the slaughterhouse, they're still engaging in erotic activities if they get the chance. I always remember once driving on the South Island And they were sheep everywhere, of course. And there was one particular fenced off section, a paddock that was fenced off with lambs on it. And these lambs were not foraging on the scrub and on the rough areas that sheep usually have for their eating areas. These lambs were in a special fenced off paddock with salad greens all planted in rows. And you could just look at these lambs from the road as you go by, and they were in ecstasy. Their wool was shining in the sunlight. They didn't have to climb up mountains looking for something to chew on. They didn't have to chew on twigs or dry grass or scrub or bush. They had row after row of fresh salad greens just for them. They looked so happy. But what's the purpose of that special paddock? It's to fatten these lambs for the slaughter. But they were just going with the flow. They were just enjoying the moment. And of course, every so often, the farmer comes out and weighs the lambs. Are you eating enough? Are you enjoying enough? Because the farmer has his purpose in mind. The fatter you get, the more luxurious your coat of wool gets, the more money I get when you're slaughtered. This is the life of sheep and goats. And so it's very appropriate that the Yeyanti uses the example of goats. And you know the story already if you were in class yesterday. You heard it so wonderfully narrated. The he-goat was minding his own business, wandering through the forest. And then he came upon a she-goat trapped in a well. And he worked very vigorously to dig her out of the well. This signifies economic development. He had to use his goat horns to dig up the earth from the side of the well so that the she-goat could come out. He didn't mind all the hard labor. So Prabhupada takes that opportunity to point out that this is the cause of economic development in the world. Man is attracted to woman, and therefore he's willing to give up his freedom, he's willing to give up his time, give up his independence, and work very hard. So this is Yayati describing himself. And then, up from the well emerges the she-goat. And Yayati describes, it was a very beautiful she-goat. With very nice goat hips. And then she looked at him, and she saw, what a charming, handsome he-goat. We'll read Yayati's telling of the story, because I didn't say those things. When the she-goat, who had very nice hips, got out of the well and saw the very handsome he-goat, she desired to accept him as her husband. When she did so, many other she-goats also desired him as their husband, because he had a very beautiful bodily structure and a nice mustache and beard, and was expert in discharging semen and in the art of sexual intercourse. Therefore, just as a person haunted by a ghost exhibits madness, the best of the he-goats, attracted by the many she-goats, engaged in erotic activities and naturally forgot his real business of self-realization. So this is going to be Yayati's theme. This is his story, told in allegory of the he-goat and she-goat. His theme is, I forgot the goal of my life. I forgot about self-realization. He had become so shameless that when he was cursed by Shukracharya to lose his old age, he shamelessly asked his sons, please give me your youth for my old age. I haven't finished enjoying. Now he's regretting that even though I got the youth of my son, I still am not happy. I've spent all that youthful energy trying to enjoy my senses. Still, I'm unsatisfied. He describes that the desire for sense gratification is like a fire that's never put out. The more butter that you put on the fire, as we can see in yogas, the higher the flames get. So he's presenting his autobiography to his wife and for the benefit of everyone. Of course, by his wife hearing this, she'll benefit. At the end of their life, she's going to understand. So her husband is doing her a great favor. He's doing himself a favor, he's doing her a favor, and he's doing the readers of Srimad Bhagavatam a favor by giving such an honest testimony. Look, this is me, this is what happened to me. Another thing that Yayati does is clearly elucidates material happiness and its pitfalls. This is a difficult subject because who doesn't want to be happy? And so we may feel a little uncomfortable when we hear material happiness derided so much. Okay, we don't want distress, but what's wrong with happiness? We fail to understand how material nature is consisting of dualities. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, Dandva Mohena Bharata, the dualities of illusion. You can't have one half of the duality without the other. The two come together in an inseparable package. So if you want material happiness, that means you also want material pain. Whatever you want in this world, you'll get the opposite also. If not sometime in this lifetime, you'll get it in the next lifetime. You had it in the previous lifetime. Of course, we just say, I don't care about the past. I don't care about the future. I just want now. Happiness now. But the Shastra is telling you, think about it. Think about your past. Think about your future. Even think about now. The happiness that you're getting now is so meager and insubstantial. This is Yayati's point. He says, one who knows that material happiness, whether good or bad, in this life or in the next, on this planet or on the heavenly planets, is temporary and useless, and that an intelligent person should not try to enjoy or even think of such things. Not even think of material happiness? This seems like an impossible standard to reach. But Yayati is convinced that if he can convince you to understand and accept this knowledge, you'll be able to come gradually to this platform. He gradually came to this understanding. He wasn't Shukadeva Goswami who just walked out of the womb and straight into the forest. No, Yayati had his drama, as we would say these days. So how is it that one should not aspire for material happiness in any way, shape, or form, and one should not even think of material happiness? How is that? Yayati explains. If you're actually the knower of the self, then as a self-realized person, you know quite well that material happiness is the very cause of continued material existence and forgetfulness of one's own constitutional position. Think about it. Material happiness prolongs material existence. Now we say, well, so what? I don't mind having prolonged material existence as long as I can be happy at least a few moments. But you have to say, this is not intelligent. You're meant for much better. Not only do you prolong your material existence, and material existence means happiness and distress, pain and pleasure, birth, death, disease, old age. Not only do you prolong that, but you forget your own constitutional position. You never know who you are. So we see the Bhagavatam standard is completely different from what people consider to be normal. And therefore, only by repeated hearing of the Bhagavatam can we deprogram ourselves from the illusion that so saturates our consciousness. Yayati has reached his conclusion. He says, I will now give up all these material desires for material happiness. I shall now meditate on the Supreme Personality Godhead. I'll be free from the dualities of mental concoction. Remember in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that in the second chapter, the sage is free from desires for material pleasure, which spring from mental concoction. You're seeing something that actually has no substantial existence, like horse eggs or flowers in the sky. This dream of material happiness is never to be achieved in a way that you'll actually be fulfilled. And then look at the havoc that's caused in the world by everyone madly pursuing their own vision of material happiness. There's not enough resources in the world for satisfying persons' artificial desires. There's not enough space in the world to dispose of all the waste created by persons using resources to attempt satisfaction. So just those two things alone to let us know something is crazy here, something is not working. Currently, human beings are living as if the earth is 1.5 times what it is in terms of resources, life support systems. We've already exceeded the capacity of the earth for sustaining human life. Not based on living simply, but based on living the way people are now. They've exceeded the carrying capacity of the earth by 50%. Yet, there's a paradox amidst all this. We've explained that, first of all, there are not enough natural resources to sustain human civilization as it's living now. And secondly, there's not enough space to get rid of all the waste from production of consumerism. But even if there were enough resources, even if there was enough space to get rid of all the waste, and you just let every human being go for it, just treat this world as you like in order to be fulfilled, even if that happened, still no one would be happy. So this should let us know that human civilization is completely off track. First of all, the world can't support their endeavors. There's not enough resources. There's not enough space for waste disposal. But even if there were, still people wouldn't be happy. This is a madness that is afflicting human society. And the Bhagavatam stands directly opposed to this madness. So this is why you see such strong statements. It's a different type of civilization. In fact, it is the real civilization being presented as Srimad Bhagavatam. A civilization that respects the power of Maya. A civilization that seeks to order the male-female attraction so that both man and woman can make spiritual progress while in this body, while in this world. But we shouldn't think, oh, this is very quaint, this is very restrictive. Sometimes, well, we're all devotees, Prabhu, Mataji, we're all devotees. But the Bhagavatam also instructs that until one is totally on the platform of self-realization, one should always maintain respect for the duality of male-female. Until one is on the Paramahansa platform, one should always have a healthy appreciation that man is man, woman is woman, and there's the fire and the butter. Keeping all that in mind, you can understand Prichit Maharaj's reaction later in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto when Shukadeva Goswami starts telling him about the Rasa Leela. How the gopis ran into the forest, attracted by Krishna's flute. As Shukadeva was describing the beginning of Ras Lila, Pritchett Maharaj, listening, looked around in the audience, and he noticed that some of the sages, rishis, and other personalities present during the speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam, they were looking a bit uncomfortable, like, wait a minute, this sounds like boy-girl affairs. How could this be any relation to the ultimate goal of life? This is what any intelligent person rejects, knowing it to be temporary, insubstantial, material, contaminated, saturated by the three modes of nature. And now Srimadeva Goswami is talking about these affairs by Krishna, playing his flute, attracting young girls in the middle of the night, in the depth of the forest. This is an affair of the material energy. So Pritchett Maharaj, he's a king. More than a king, he's also a philosopher, Vrajarshi. So he knows what's best for the people. So he's assisting in the process of Srimad Bhagavatam being delivered. He notices there's some doubts in the audience. So he says to Sukadeva Goswami a very key question. Wait a minute. You're saying that these gopis, they're pure and transcendental. But let's look at the facts. They didn't know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're attracted to him as a lover. Isn't that an affair of the material energy? Isn't that the three modes? It's a material situation if I ever saw one. They don't know he's God. They're simply thinking he's the most beautiful young boy. Isn't that Maya? Sukadeva Goswami, knowing Pritchett Maharaj's mentality, that he's asking the question for the benefit of others, chastises him. I've already dealt with this subject matter. Don't you remember in the seventh canto when I spoke about Shishupal getting liberation, even though he thought of Krishna as his enemy? So if that could happen to Shishupal, he attained liberation from material existence, even though he had such anger against Krishna, what do you think of those who love Krishna favorably? So then Sukadeva Goswami explained, let's understand Krishna. I know your fear, Pritchett Maharaj, because all living entities are qualitatively equal with Krishna. Just like the particle of gold is equal in quality with the gold mine. So someone could say that the gopis were thinking of Krishna, they attained liberation from material existence. Similarly, I'll think of my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my partner, and I'll attain freedom from material existence because we're all Brahman. This is what's going on underneath you. They thought of Krishna, I'll think of Mary Lou, and what's the problem? We are all Brahman. Sarvam Kal become Brahman. So Sukadeva Goswami knows this is what's behind Pritchett Maharaj's question. In addition to the doubts in the audience, there's also the possibility of the Mayavadis and personas taking advantage of this. Krishna dance with young girls? I dance with young girls. What is the difference? This is the meaning of Bhagavatam. Everyone can just be Brahman and entertain themselves. So Sukadeva Goswami defines the Supreme Personality of Godhead as distinct from the living entities. Avayasya prameyasya nirganasya gunatmana. So let's look at Krishna. Let's look at the facts here. First of all, Krishna is avyaya. He's inexhaustible. Second, he's aprameyasya. He is immeasurable. Thirdly, nirganasya. He is free of all material qualities, and gunatmana, he's the controller of material nature. So there's no question of his being in Maya when he's the controller of the modes. He has no material qualities. He cannot be covered by the illusory energy because he's avyaya, he's unlimited, inexhaustible, aprameya, immeasurable. Whereas the living entity is tiny, and therefore the living entity can be overpowered by the material energy. That's just the way it is. It's a very, very bizarre situation, but it can happen, that the spiritual particle, the Atma, can be overwhelmed by the illusory energy. Ordinarily, it shouldn't happen, you would think. But remember, all the potencies are under Krishna's control. If Krishna likes, he can arrange that the inferior potency overwhelms the superior potency. In a dream-like condition known as material existence, this happens. By hearing this Bhagavad knowledge, we become liberated. Therefore, Bhagavatam stresses repeated hearing. Keep hearing that it's just a dream. You will wake up. Don't make the mistake of thinking, oh, we've already heard this before. We don't have to hear it again. We just live our life, go through what we go through. No, by repeated hearing, the point starts to dawn more and more. This is the Bhagavatam process. Shimbatam Swakatam Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Kriyatasta Yavadrani Vidyanoti Sirhitsatam. By hearing the Bhagavat science, the super soul in your heart becomes pleased. And then the Lord in the heart aids your endeavors to be Krishna conscious by personally cleansing the desire for material enjoyment from your heart. So Krishna in your heart, attracted by your constant hearing of his message, he helps. As Prabhupada would say, Krishna is not lazy in your heart. You hear about him, and he's working on your behalf, cleansing what Yayati is describing, the desire for material enjoyment. That desire for material enjoyment, Yayati is saying, it doesn't deliver. It's a false promise. I know I've been trying for 1,000 years to enjoy my senses, and still I'm not satisfied. Remember he described, just as a person haunted by a ghost exhibits madness. That's how he describes the attempt for material happiness. So we have to scientifically understand this. It can seem difficult at first. Now, what's wrong with just being happy? I don't want distress, but what's wrong with having material happiness? And what's wrong with male, female, just letting things flow and just, you know, the good vibrations and... What's wrong with all that? The Vedic civilization regulates it. It says, all right, men and women, they're like that. So how do we package the whole situation so both can make spiritual advancement? The Vedic civilization is not negativist. Bhagavatam is not a negativist book. It's the most ingenious instruction manual for how to arrange human affairs so that they achieve the ultimate goal of life. So Yayati is speaking in this way. He told the story of the he-goat and the she-goat to his wife. He said it's a story that those householders who have retired from family life, when they hear this story, they lament, just as I'm lamenting. They know how it is. They've been there, they've done that. So then he concludes, speaking to his wife, I'll now give it all up. I'm going to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he gave back his youth to his son, Puru. He returned his son, Puru's youth, and took back his old age, and then retired from family life, retired from all material affairs. But not only did Yayati do that, but his wife also became spiritually motivated and began to focus on her spiritual development. In this way, Yayati did her, in the end, he did her a great favor. And also, he's done us such a great favor by giving us such a graphic account of telling it like it is, making us use our intelligence and think.